Winona Forever is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For more podcasts about movies and nostalgia, head on over to cageclub.me. Hi, I'm Lindsay Gibb.
And I'm Rekha Tulsaram.
And this is Winona Forever.
Welcome. Today we're talking about the film Autumn in New York, which is came out in 2000. It's a drama romance with Richard Gere and Winona. It's about an aging restaurateur playboy fellow who's just recently has an article published in some magazine and as a bachelor and, you know, what is it, like most eligible bachelor or something like that?
I don't even remember the article something part like, of it.
I kept throwing around this magazine, but anyway, he's a big player.
Yes.
And then he falls for Winona, 22-year-old Charlotte.
Yes.
And, but then, you know, quickly we find out she's terminally ill.
Yes.
And today we're joined by a guest,
Michelle Lovegrove Thompson from the TIFF Film Library. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
No problem. I have a question for you right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you pick this movie?
Well, I admit it's a process of elimination, given that I was provided a list. And as I looked at it, her more recent films, it's less common for her to have like the lead role. So I wanted to choose a film where I felt like she was still the lead person.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing this and enjoying it, you know, when I was what, like 20 or something? Approximately. So I was kind of curious to also see how the film had aged since then.
Okay.
Because she was definitely one of my favorites of the time. So gorgeous. I loved her pixie haircut, all of that stuff. Definitely wanted to invest in her as a character at the time, you know, projecting. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to revisit the film to see how closely I would still feel to my 20-year-old self.
That's fair.
A lot has changed.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I had never seen this before. I think just because I didn't think it looked good at the time, so I didn't want to see it.
I saw it when it came out.
Of course you did.
With my friend.
You had to.
With my friend Angela Mack.
Nice.
I recall that she was like crying beside me.
Oh, yeah.
But I did not like this movie back then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's one of the few films like I had only seen once since the rewatch, which was a couple days ago. And I don't own it. Yeah, it wasn't something I would have wanted to watch again.
Right. Except you were made to for this.
Yeah.
Cool.
So what did you think of it, Lindsay?
Okay. I guess it was what I expected. It was like not... It was watchable and it was like kind of enraging in moments. And so that made it sort of like enough to like keep me watching it. Whereas, I don't know, like the next movie we're going to do, I was like, this is incredibly boring.
Right.
So it wasn't like that. I kind of thought it was possible that it could be
something.
Like boring top of not being something that I wanted to see, but it wasn't boring.
Yeah. It was not boring. I also felt that because it was set in New York, autumn moving into Christmas.
Yeah.
I watched it last night and sort of ends at Christmas, although obviously it ends sadly. Yeah. So I enjoyed the setting. Like I always like watching movies that are set sort of in a sparkly time, you know, in New York or whatever. So the setting was good. I mostly felt like I watched the movie with a sense of almost outrage. Like almost every beat of the film is contestable. You're just like, okay, pause here.
Yeah.
Really?
I wrote so many notes. Like There's some movies
more
where
notes
I just,
than I usually do.
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, what did just happen?
I just was writing a lot of Richard Gere's lines down and said, really?
Yes.
Just like, really, he says this?
It was totally the lines. There was a lot of lines that I wrote down, which we'll get
so
to. It's funny that this is, so it's funny that it's called Autumn in New York, just because, I don't know, like, I guess it is autumn for a minute and whatever. But then, like, the song Autumn in New York is not in this movie at all, which I don't really know why. There was maybe a reason, or maybe it just didn't work out.
It sounds like it's a working title that never got changed or something, right? Like, what are we going to call this love? It's just, you know, I don't know, like, maybe because it's so quick, it's like, you know, the autumn.
Right.
But it, it's no good. But it does capture New York. I guess that was part of it. Like, they really got a lot of Central Park in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's about it, actually.
It was, and also maybe it's fitting that this episode's coming out on December 26th, because it is Christmas that this ends at. But this movie came out in August 2000. Mm. Why?
Oh. What bad a weird timing.
Yeah.
That's not good. That's not going to sell.
Yeah, it didn't make sense to me why it came out in August. Anyway.
Yes. I also didn't realize that Elaine Stritch plays Winona's like grandmother.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't have known who she was, I guess, at the time of originally seeing the film. So that was really interesting as well, like this character piece that she's doing, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I liked her.
Dolly.
If anything, I liked her.
Dolly. Yes. Also, are you aware that this was... So I looked it up, and it said it was directed by a woman named Joan Chen.
Yes.
Which was the other reason I picked it. Because I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Who is this director? Why did she decide to direct this? Also, are you aware that she is an actress from Twin Peaks?
Yes.
The woman who directed this?
Yes, okay. She was Josie Packard on Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
What an interesting connection.
I know. I was like, what? Joan Chen. So weird.
I was like, oh, it's written by a woman too, but it's actually a guy named Allison.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that too. I was like, cool. Yeah. This
but
is
I'm like,
two
of course
women.
It's written by a man. But
yeah,
anyway.
it felt like it.
Yeah.
This is the last feature film that Joan Chen directed. She only directed two, but this was the last one.
That was it. She was like, maybe this is not for me.
Maybe. The movie didn't lose money, though. It seems...
Okay. I think people love those types of... Like,
yeah. So I was wrong. In last episode, I said Girl Interrupted lost money. It actually... So I just said what it made domestically. It actually made $48 million worldwide. So that was more than the $40 million that it cost. Okay. But this movie cost $65 million to make, and it made $90 million worldwide.
Okay.
So it made more money than Girl Interrupted, which I guess it's more of a like mainstream, I guess, movie than... And Girl
easier
Interrupted
to take,
was. Yeah. Easier to market,
probably.
Yeah. Huh. Okay, so let's talk about the movie and what happens in it and what made us mad. I mean, to begin, he's not. You can tell right away he's not a good person.
Yeah, he's a douche.
Does it start with him hitting on a pregnant woman and then breaking up with his current girlfriend?
Yes.
Like that's like in the first.
It's the first.
Minutes of the film.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And for no reason. Like, he was just like, oh, guess
it's
what?
It's time.
It's time. Oh, there's another girl.
You know. There's a girl in a boat.
Yeah.
Just a random girl floating by in a boat, which was Winona.
Mm-hmm.
But he just, like, looked at her meaningfully. And I'm like, really? But she's in a boat. Like, I don't understand. Like, I think Winona's, you know, captivating and everything. But, like, not in that moment floating by in a boat.
Yeah. I think it was just like... I mean, everything about this movie is, but anyway, the boat look. And then later in the restaurant, he sees her again and then happens to know her grandmother because he used to like go around with her mother.
Yeah.
Which was another weird thing. And
yeah, they were friends.
Yeah. They were friends. They never like slept together because he like slept with her best friend or something like that.
Right.
But, like, he could have been her dad.
So, that's weird that he was friends... Like, he's friends with her grandmother and knows her mother.
Yeah.
And then that doesn't stop him at
all.
No, like,
nothing.
There's
no boundaries.
Hesitation.
No boundaries there. He's like, I'm going to go for this.
In fact, it seems like it's like, oh, cool. I know her family. That helps. Like,
yeah, I got an in. I have an in.
I met her.
Well, when he calls, she's like, oh, did you want to speak to my grandmother? Just hold on. And he's like, no, I'm calling for you.
Yeah.
And he kind of like, you should stop saying wow so much. Time to grow up or whatever.
Yeah, I wrote that one down. Like, you're a grown up now. When's that going to stop?
Yeah.
Like, fuck you.
Yeah. And then she's all kind of embarrassed. She's amazing on the phone. Like, it's such a weird moment of her just being like, oh my God, he's gone. Me like off to the side and like everything he says she like exclaims kind of outside of the
like
phone.
She's so excited, like, and so into him calling her, like, bullshit, but anyway.
But like, and he says shitty things to her and she's like excited
she's
about
eating it.
It
up.
Yeah, she loves it.
That whole scene where she arrives at his apartment and he's like performing a play. Like lying. It's just like a casebook study of like bullshit men.
Yeah.
I was just like, this is the type of person.
I want you to design me a hat, blah, blah, blah. Like, obviously,
in the shape of
her.
A woman's hip.
Oh,
that was, and that was the part that she was like, oh my God, he wants me to do it in the shape of a hip. And I'm just like, no, do not be wooed by that.
That's
that
not a
weird
thing. Yeah.
And then was it? It was a hat with a bird. Okay, here's the thing. So then he's like, oh, my date stood me up. Do you want to come with me? Do you want to see the dress?
Mm-hmm.
And then she like wears the dress that he has bought already, which is weird.
And somehow fits her fine, just perfectly. And, you know.
And she doesn't wear the hat.
She doesn't wear the hat.
She doesn't wear it.
It's like,
why?
What the
it's
hell?
So weird.
And they never reference that she didn't wear the hat.
Nope.
They talk about the hat again later. She's never wearing the hat.
You know what I wondered was if she had brought the like sparkly, weird, plastically shawl that she wears with the dress.
Oh, yes. Like, where did that shawl, like, plasticky thing come from?
I just thought it was part of the dress.
It's like, maybe she
combo,
the
but maybe not.
Bag?
Maybe it was in her garbage bag. Because she did have a garbage bag of things with her. I thought it was just a hat, but maybe it was that. I don't know.
Like, honestly, like, he was just so gross to look at. Like, he was so sleazy. And like, he's consistent. Like, I don't know. He's always sleazy in movies. But this was just even, like, creepier because he played a creep.
Yeah.
So, like, there was no... There was only, he was really one dimensional. He likes to sleep with women, lots of them, and, you know.
And she's clearly a character that's made to, like, teach him how to be a better person and then die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's her whole purpose.
And then at the end of the film, they just put a cap on it, right? Mm-hmm. They're laying there, and he says, like, oh, you ruined me for other women or something. And she's like, I saved you for them.
Yeah.
So they just literally, they're like, in case y'all missed it, we're just going to spell out the message of the film.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is she served to, like, rehabilitate this man so that he could lead a full life with other women, which actually turns out to be his daughter and grandson.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is fascinating. I did find the whole, which we already touched on briefly, just the whole plot device of him having known her mother, getting her mother's best friend pregnant. Like, I'm just not sure what the point of the whole family structure is. Like, it's kind of a weird, discombobulated film.
Yep.
Trying to figure out all the pieces. And what was, like, this Allison man who wrote this film? Like, what was he trying to get at?
Good
what
question.
What was he trying to work out?
And Winona's friends, like, it was, like, such a romance stereotype. She had, like, the gay best friend.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, what did she call? Well, she answered the phone. She's like, hey.
Hey, bitch, I'm ready.
Or something like that.
And then he's like, what? And then she's like, oh my God, it's you. I didn't expect her. I don't know.
But yeah, there were like, one-dimensional friends that she had and didn't really see much of them. She saw more of him. She, like, spent a lot of time with his friends and, like, invested her time in him.
Totally.
Definitely doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
No, not at all.
Oh my God. And the party, obviously, where he sleeps with his ex.
Oh, right.
While she's reading children bedtime stories.
I know. Yeah. She's like this wonderful fairy person. She's a manic pixie dream girl, right?
Yeah.
Like, is that the definition? I tried to look up the definition to be sure that I was using it correctly. And I think she hits all the things.
Yeah.
She's teaching.
For sure.
She's teaching a man. That's like her whole thing, and then disappearing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think this was peak time for the manic pixie dream girl genre, because there's this one, there was Garden State, but there's also Sweet November, that one with Charlize
Keanu,
where she was also dying slowly and probably died at Christmas also. I can't remember.
Yeah, I never watched that one either.
Yeah, it was also very bad.
There's an episode about it on the Charlize Theron podcast on this network, so you can go listen to that right after this.
Also, when you date someone for maybe a month or maybe even 2 weeks, would you let them talk to your doctor?
Oh, that made me so mad.
What was that?
Not only talk to the doctor by himself while she's waiting in the hallway.
She's not with him. Why is he talking to the doctor alone? Is this the 1960s?
It made no sense.
The doctors talk about the woman's health, but they don't, you know,
like talk to so her. Many TV shows and movies hammer home the, you're not even allowed to see them. They're in like the, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Emergency.
If you're not
or
related,
but you're
go
not
away.
Related. So you got to go. And they're like, but I'm their partner of like 15 years. Nope. You're not married. Nothing. You got to go away. And
Richard
then
Gere.
In this case,
nothing.
Known her for 3 weeks. Can I have a word with the doctor alone?
The doctor like calls him. They're like buddies. You know, like, I don't know. It's so strange.
It was very strange and upsetting.
Yeah.
It made me mad. I wrote in all caps a lot in my notes, I noticed. Oh, boy.
I mean, the whole relationship obviously moved with like, tremendous velocity. But I think it was, like, their second date when they decided to continue their quote-unquote relationship.
Right.
I think that's the second date, since she starts talking about love in different contexts. Like, I can't remember the lines, but there's a couple lines peppered throughout the film. Like, what about love?
Right.
And I think
yes.
that starts very early, like on their second date. It's the same date the first time she collapses. Sort of they're having like this magical dancing. Anyway, so I mean, I guess the whole thing is a man's fantasy fairy tale.
Yeah,
totally.
He has one line. I think it was when the first time she was trying to show up at his place or whatever, and she's late, and he said, "What's the point of being young and beautiful if it's not to keep men waiting?"
Yes, that's when she was bringing the hat.
Yeah.
Here's a quote from him. Women seem to love it when you lie to them.
Oh, yeah. I have that written down as well. I love it.
You love it? I mean, I loved hating this movie, I think. I just loved watching it and being so mad and just, like, laughing hysterically at how, like, over-the-top ridiculously horrible it was.
So frustrating.
Like, the characters. How bad the characters were,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And all the choices they were making.
And all the choices. Yeah.
After, like, you know, he cheats on her, blah, 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 and he's trying to, like, beg for her forgiveness, he's like, let me love you. And she's just exhausted, and she goes, I'm so tired.
Yeah.
So she, like, gave up fighting him.
Yeah.
And was just like, fine.
Yeah, can you let me love you? I wrote that line down, too, because it was just one of those lines. Like, I'm just a woman standing in front of a man, or like, you know, those types of lines. Yeah. I felt like, can you let me love you was one of those.
Yes. I also wrote down the line, our love is a race.
Our love is what?
Our love is a race.
And I
can't remember which character said that.
Oh.
But at this point, it could be either of them.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
I'm like, oh man. Yeah, it was a very funny film. I did like having Anthony LaPaglia.
Yeah.
As, like, his friend trying to be his conscious.
Yeah,
he's like,
yes.
You know, treat her nice.
I do like Anthony LaPaglia in general in life. I like him.
He's a nice, Empire kind
Records.
Soul.
Yeah, he's good in things sometimes. one thing when I started watching this, because I'd never seen it before, and in the last episode, Anne said to us, does she have cancer? And I was like, yeah, I guess so. Or you said, yes, she did. And then at the beginning of this, she's like, oh, it's my heart. I have a heart problem.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's not cancer. But then later,
it's
like seems
like
it was a tumor in her heart. So I don't know if it was cancer.
They never really seemed to answer that.
No.
I was like, she has cancer in her heart. I don't know. Like, what? They're piling it on.
Did you guys think of the part when they're in the car and she's trying to get him to tell the truth about the fact that he just cheated on her at this party? And she's like, you know, ever since I started dying. I can feel my heartbeat and I can tell if you're lying. And she touches my chest.
I know.
Oh yeah.
I know. I said as if she's a human lie detector.
I was like, what? Does everybody have that ability?
Well, but I don't know. Can you really tell?
It's so stupid. It's so dumb. This movie.
Yeah. What did you think, Michelle? The same?
Well, exactly. But I also thought, they're really embracing the magical dying woman.
Yes.
Trope
yes.
or whatever. I don't know.
Exactly.
I wasn't sure if they were meant it to be real or if that's was maybe supposed to be in tune with her personality. Be kind of, what is the word? Really earnest.
Yeah, well, she is a person who said at one point, my yoga teacher calls me unique.
Yeah. unique.
She's a unique?
Yes, not
what does
unique,
that mean?
A unique.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I didn't know that.
And you're
that.
A typical.
Oh, I didn't know she was a unique.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, that's something else. No, it's the same. It's just as bad. Ooh, this movie. Another line that I just died during was when she asked him why he works in food.
Why are you the food guy? What is it about the food?
Food is the only beautiful thing that truly nourishes.
And she said, is that a quote?
Is that a quote?
And he goes, it's me. It was the way he said it's me too. It was so serious. And there was a big pause. It's me.
Oh, this movie.
This movie.
Brutal.
Indeed. Oh dear. Yeah. The touching of the chest.
I felt like this film. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I felt like the film would function actually well as a drinking game.
Yes.
You could set up your criteria
mm-hmm. for sure.
Certain types of lines, or every time it seems like he's been reading from a pickup artist's playbook.
Yes.
You could take a shot. You'd be drunk in the first 10 minutes, probably.
Yes.
You know, every time you see a hat, or
one of her hats,
the crane.
Yeah, the crane is a common she uses
birds,
the crane and
bird
stuff.
Imagery. There's a lot of
another thing that sort of hammers home how magical she is that she really likes chimes.
Yeah, there's a lot of chimes.
Oh God,
yeah,
I'm dying. What's that?
Oh, I said she is kind of bird-like.
Yeah,
yeah. They're so
nest, yeah.
Chimes and nests.
Situation.
Oh God.
Yes. I did think it was interesting at the very end after she has died and mm-hmm. he receives the package with the little, bird ornament
box watch.
Reminiscent of the hat, and it's the watch.
Yeah.
And she said, you'll get this back when you've forgotten you gave it to me or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, who did she arrange with to deliver that after she died?
Did she know?
The
mechanism. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was just going to leave it on the floor there? I don't know.
But it really did drive home. He's standing, in the window, looking out at New York.
Oh yeah,
holding this memento.
He unplugs the Christmas lights. It's over.
I wondered if the watch thing, maybe I forgot that she said those things to him about the watch. But I thought, mm-hmm. is him receiving the watch after she died I don't know. Are they trying to say time stood still while they were together, and then now he has to move on?
Yeah,
or
exactly. So symbolic.
Oh boy.
Or, just that now he's going to think of her every time he looks at his wrist, and her role as his savior is complete. She served a very mm-hmm. specific purpose in his life.
Yeah. Now he'll maybe be able to have a relationship instead of being it's time for me to break up with you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who
but
knows?
That is, I did think it was interesting that the film ended not with him pursuing a real romantic relationship with the real woman he could love, but instead with his daughter on a boat holding his grandson,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to romantic love. It did end with family love.
Right.
So I was like, well, that's an interesting choice.
Yeah. At least that
that's something
that maybe was
the only really
made him slightly redeemable. I don't know. He's not redeemable. Mm.
Not really.
No. Mm. When he cheats on her at that party.
I know.
And then afterwards, I really believed him in the car when he was saying he didn't. Yeah. And then she doesn't. She knows. Yeah, she and knows. And then he admits it or whatever. And then he calls her juvenile for being upset about it.
Yeah. Cool, cool,
what
cool.
The heck?
She's supposed to be thrilled about it.
Right.
Yeah. Her date sleeps with somebody else at a party that she's at while she's reading stories to children.
No, she was so
bad.
She was so lovely. She showed up and immediately went to be with the children. I don't know. It was weird. Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. And then the time where she, like, collapses, I think when she was skating, and she collapses and they go to the hospital and the whole family's there and they're all waiting. He gets to see her before her immediate family, like...
Yes! What?
What? How does he get in first?
I don't know. It makes no sense.
They just don't let that happen in hospitals.
I was surprised that the document that she filled out was enough to, like, negate her original document that said she didn't want any medical intervention if she was dying or whatever from the heart thing.
Did he forge something?
He forged something. Because he forged, like, 12 of them. So, like, I don't... Yeah.
It's cool. Forging her signature, you know?
Like, no witnesses saw her sign it, right? Other than him. So was that enough? Like, I don't know. I guess it was.
I guess so.
And then the way the doctor tells them that she's died, he comes out and throws down his hat. I'm like, that's not good bedside manner. That's not how you tell them.
You can't be angry coming out. Like,
that's obvious.
Whew.
Yeah.
That was some cinematic drama for you. Some Hollywood style.
Yeah.
What's that actor's name? A.K. Simmons?
J.K. Simmons.
J.K.
J.K. I don't know. J.K.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him mostly from that show, Oz, like the prison show.
Yes,
I know he's been in like a lot of other things, but...
Whiplash was the latest.
I was thinking towards the end of the film, obviously she consented at the end to have the medical intervention. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to parse out if she would have lived a little longer, you know, even without the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Or not. I couldn't tell. Obviously, the thing was that they were waiting until the last possible moment to do the, like, experimental surgery or whatever.
Yeah,
but it was really, I was like, wow, I mean, this is another violation. Like, it's sort of as soon as she meets this person, her life becomes joined to whatever his wishes are in a way. Like, oh, wear this dress. Go to this party while I'll do whatever I want. I believe this can save you. So, like, she changes her mind for him. And then, yeah, she dies. But I couldn't, you know, it's hard to know. Maybe it wouldn't have mattered, like the surgery or not. Maybe she was going to be dying that week. I don't know. But it felt, you know, it was an extra layer of control.
Because, I mean, she was conscious enough to talk to him and, like, to say, like, I fixed you or whatever for women. So she was at least, like, it's not like she was unconscious or whatever. Like,
true.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe she could have lived longer.
I don't know. Yeah. I feel like there's not a lot of layers to unpack in this film.
No, that's it. That's about it.
It's straightforward. Everything that happens is all that happens.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, man. I mean, I wrote down so much, but I don't know. I feel like we just blasted through all of it.
Yeah, we really did.
Angry.
It was a passionate delivery, but we did it. His wife.
I think I wrote down weird, horrible sex scene behind glass. I didn't like that sex scene.
Yeah. The hand on the glass. Yeah. That was a mistake.
Well, also, was it the first time she passed out that she was behind the glass, too? And at that time, I think I wasn't sure if she was collapsing or having sex with him. And then the second time I was like, I don't know which thing is happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Well, and then at the very end, it's like behind glass, he's trying to surprise her by decorating the Christmas tree so he doesn't see that she's fallen.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I feel like that glass has this, like, potential role a little bit.
Right. But didn't we all know, as soon as they turned the focus away from her and onto him, didn't we all know that he would turn that corner and she'd be fallen?
Yes,
for sure.
Of course. For sure.
It was obvious.
It's like, because you were like, hurry up, he's busy fixing some garland. You're like, no, obviously.
Yep. We got some Winona voiceover in this, though, which is a thing that Rekha and I enjoy. Winona voiceover. Yeah. She read poetry, but like it wasn't on screen. It was like she was reading poetry while you were watching her play with a feather and a wind chime.
Naturally. Sounds about
because,
right.
Because she is whimsical.
What a film. What a film.
It really is a film.
Autumn in New York, folks.
I was going to say, I did look up a little bit about Joan Chen.
Please, yes.
And I read an article, well, it was like an interview with her, but it did say that there had been a different director attached to direct this film. And then there was some kind of dispute and they fired that director. Mm-hmm. And she was having success with the film she had made, Shushu, The Upstairs. No, it was about a girl sent to live in Tibet. I forget exactly what the title was.
Yeah.
That was successful. So somehow she got tapped for it. So she came in really quickly. And yeah. Shot it very quickly over a few months. So I was kind of impressed thinking about, you know, it's competently directed.
Yeah.
And it seems like she had a very short prep time to do so.
Right.
And it's only her second feature. So I was also kind of looking at it from that perspective.
Yeah.
Not too critically, obviously. I was looking at a lot of different things.
Right.
But I felt like, okay, it's someone's second feature film ever. And Richard Gere and Winona Ryder, obviously at that point, are huge stars.
Yes.
So it is kind of interesting that she was brought in.
Totally.
I would sort of like would love to know more about that, in fact, actually.
That was the that only process. Thing to me that like seemed interesting. Like I was like, wow, Joan Chen. And then yeah. And it is
and
weird that it was
direct again.
Exactly. Yeah, like what happened there? Like, because yeah, I haven't seen that first film that she did, but I did understand that it was well received.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't screen this in advance for critics, apparently.
Oh,
I wonder why.
That's wow.
But yeah, this was actually the first major Hollywood film to be helmed by a woman of Asian origin.
There you go.
Boom.
So that's also something. Big.
Yeah. Why was it this?
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's shocking. Wow.
Well, if this movie has anything, it's that.
Anna Lane Stritch.
I did enjoy Stritch.
I wrote down one of her lines, even though it did not relate to like our main topic.
Right.
She said, she comes in the apartment. She's like, excuse the mess. My maid died 14 years ago.
Yes.
I wondered if she improvised some of her lines because they were so severe and quick.
Yeah. They were good.
They were so good. She was great.
And, she told Winona, don't get with that guy. He's no mm-hmm. good. Even though, like, she seemed to have a fondness for him because when she saw him in the restaurant, she was like, oh, hello, and, like, friendly. But she just was like,
mm-hmm.
no, not with my granddaughter, though. Like, I know what he's like with women, and this is not
mm-hmm.
good.
Yeah, she tried to shut it down.
Shut it down.
Also, Richard Gere is supposed to be 48 in that film.
Right, and he was probably 50-something.
I feel like he looked like an old 48.
He was actually 51. And yep. Winona was actually 29 during production.
29.
And she was supposed to be 22.
Okay.
So, you know, they shifted them a little bit. Yeah. People just talked about how handsome he was so much in this movie, too. Like, characters talked about it a lot.
And I just, like, that ego on Richard Gere must be, like, through the damn roof. His hair is, like, always perfectly styled.
Yeah.
But not once do you see him style his hair.
No. No, there's no moments like that.
Nothing.
I felt her hats looked like something her mom in Beetlejuice would have made.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Let's just throw some non sequiturs out there from this movie. That's one. Oh dear. Well, I enjoyed talking about it though. It was enraging, but I knew that the three of us would have a good time freaking out about it.
Sorry, there's not too much to unpack there.
No, you're right. There's not much else. I feel like the Joan Chen bit was like the most interesting, like, additional thing that anyone who's seen this might not have known.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Wow. Thanks, Michelle.
Yeah, thank you for coming. Thank you for calling in or answering your phone.
And for watching that again, yeah, too. Because, you know.
Yeah.
That's
I enjoyed a revisit.
Okay.
That's good. It's an interesting artifact to serve as a way to sort of look at how things have evolved, you know, in the last 18 years. So
totally.
For that, it was kind of an interesting thing.
Absolutely.
Sure.
So, do you guys think it would be successful? Like, I think it would not work now, but
I could be
wrong.
Maybe I don't think so.
We have films that are just as bad.
I'm sure we do, but you'd have so many articles about how bad this was. You know what I mean? Or like how bad the dynamic between them was.
Yeah.
Now.
There'd be so many.
That then, I guess, maybe it didn't happen. I mean, who knows? But yeah, no, I don't think. I feel like it couldn't work now.
No.
I don't think so.
No. Well, great. Cool.
Awesome. Okay.
Thanks, Michelle, for joining us. And our
great, thank you.
Next episode is about, what is it, Lost Souls?
Lost Souls.
Which, have you seen, Michelle?
No, I haven't actually.
Well,
yes, I've.
Well,
you don't have to watch it. No, I don't know.
It's another doozy.
It is another doozy.
That's all.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye. Enjoy your trip.
Bye. Yeah, thanks.
And have a good
Merry
holiday.
Christmas.
Yes, Merry Christmas. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Winona Forever is part of the Cage Club Podcast Network. Episodes produced by Chris Landry. Music by No Refunds. Hosted by Lindsay Gibb and Rekha Tulsaram. Contact Rekha and Lindsay at winona@cageclub.me.